Please, Keelan.
Adopt an internal cost of carbon policy to ensure major city decisions formally consider the social and environmental costs of carbon emissions in evaluation processes.
I will make some introductory remarks, but I believe I will let Commissioner Hardesty go first. Commissioner Hardesty.
Mayor, if you would not mind going first, I just lost my run of show.
Happy to do it. This resolution follows through on one of the commitments I made last December for how the city would make sure that we are walking our talk on climate by taking additional actions to address the climate impacts of city operations. Last month, we heard from staff about progress on another one of those commitments, and that was accelerating the decarbonization of our city fleet by transitioning more of our city sedans to electric vehicles. I made the commitment to adopt an internal price on carbon for the city of Portland in response to advocacy from youth climate activists who called on the city to establish a climate test to ensure that we're taking climate impacts into account on all major decisions. Young people, of course, will bear the consequences of the decisions we make today, and youth activists are correct to urge the city and other public agencies and institutions to prioritize meaningful and bold climate action. Climate science tells us that globally we need to reach net zero emissions by 2050 if we're to avoid the worst impacts of climate change. And that means we all need to significantly step up our efforts to reduce emissions and restore a safe environment. In working to meet our community-wide goals, it's critical that we do what we can as a city to reduce our own share of emissions and help set a really good example of how other governments and organizations and companies can do the same thing. By requiring bureaus to incorporate the best available climate science into their decision-making processes, focusing as a first step on capital projects and investments that tend to have the highest carbon impacts, this internal cost of carbon policy will help us make climate smart decisions that lead to lower carbon outcomes. And with that, Commissioner Hardesty, I'll turn it over to you, or if you'd like to turn it over to staff and then make your comments later, that's also fine.
I think that would be perfect. My apologies. I had it all up. Andrea, please take it away.
Great. Well, thank you, Commissioner Hardesty, Mayor Wheeler, and commissioners. As the mayor mentioned, first of all, for the record, I'm Andrea Durbin, the Director of the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability. As the mayor mentioned, the idea for the city to adopt a climate test came to us from youth climate advocates, starting with the climate strike in September of last year. The mayor's commitment to implement a climate test in the form of an internal cost of carbon was included in the climate emergency declaration council adopted in June of this year. As you've noted, and as the climate emergency declaration emphasizes, the internal cost of carbon is just one step among many that we need to undertake to manage carbon emissions in city government's own operations and across our community. BPS views this internal cost of carbon policy as one step in a much larger strategy to reduce emissions community-wide. We know that we need to make huge strides in the years ahead if we want to bend the emissions curve downward at the rate necessary to prevent the most catastrophic effects of climate change. The climate emergency declaration, passed unanimously by council last June, sounded that alarm and directs us to cut our emissions in half by 2030 from 1990 levels. That means that we have to cut emissions by an additional 30% over the next 9 years. This requires us to act bolder and implement faster actions. We will need to work on multiple levels to encourage decarbonization in the buildings, energy, and transportation sectors across the community. Much of this will depend on effective policy action at the local and state level and with anticipated support from the federal level next year. A critical tool in the decarbonization toolkit is putting proper pricing signals in place. Today's recommendation is for council to adopt a new internal city policy for an internal cost of carbon. To be clear, this proposed internal policy offers a first step to prioritizing climate goals in our internal decision-making process by applying a social cost of carbon as an evaluation tool to help the city prioritize the most climate-friendly options. Over time, and as directed by the Climate Emergency Declaration, we will need to expand this work to add an actual carbon fee on certain internal activities, like air travel and fuel purchases. You will hear about those opportunities from some of our Bureau partners today. And we agree with youth climate activists who are calling for a climate test to be developed, which places a carbon value for larger community-facing projects. We see this policy as a future step towards expansion over time. Another policy currently under development and out for public comment right now is the proposed Healthy Climate Fee. While that proposal does not adopt a social price of carbon, it would start the process of valuing and accounting for the human and economic costs of climate change impacts in our community. The city's climate action plan from 2015 stated that Portland would support a statewide carbon tax, but the state has not adopted a carbon price. That the climate action plan calls for the city to consider local adoption of carbon pricing mechanisms. We've waited a long time for the city to lead here, but we've seen those efforts fail time and time again. Now is the time for Portland to show its true leadership and innovation, and by doing so, invigorate our local economy, create good family wage jobs, and ensure that those most at risk of climate change, especially BIPOC communities, directly benefit, all the while we improve the livability of our community as we adapt to a changing climate. Evaluating the internal cost of carbon in our own operations is an important place to start and ensures that we are walking our own talk. So we really appreciate your consideration of this proposal today. And we appreciate, I want to extend my appreciation to our Bureau colleagues and partners joining us today. We'll have colleagues from Office of Management and Finance, PBOT, and Water Bureau. But now I will turn things over to Danny Grady, who's a senior energy specialist at BPS. He'll go over the specifics of this internal policy. Danny.
Thank you, Director Durbin. And good afternoon, Mayor and Commissioners. For the record, my name is Danny Grady, and I serve as the Senior Energy Specialist with the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability. I'm going to share my screen and start my presentation. Today, I plan to provide a summary of the proposed internal cost of carbon policy. We will cover the policy intent, the scope of project types that will be covered by the policy, the bureaus to whom it applies, the mechanics of the policy, and how we plan to measure success. The internal cost of carbon policy originated from a directive within the Climate Emergency Declaration that was adopted by City Council in June of this year. The directive was adopted due to the activism and engagement of Portland youth who got the city's attention in last September's global climate strike. A core message we heard from youth is to develop a climate test policy. The emergency declaration directed the city to develop a carbon cost in the form of a fee or shadow price to ensure that we account for carbon emissions associated with city investments. And we were tasked with delivering such a policy to council this year. The internal cost of carbon policy I present today is the first phase of the climate test. The directive states that the carbon cost mechanism should be used to inform decision-making, specifically where city investments have the most impact on carbon emissions. And we need a flexible policy that can adapt and expand over time to amplify its impact throughout the community. The goal of the policy is to institutionalize how carbon is considered in city investment decisions. Much like an equity toolkit has been developed to guide staff how to apply equity considerations into decision-making, we also need to develop a common framework for carbon. The policy sets out to quantify carbon impacts in city decision-making and make projects that pursue reduced carbon options more attractive to decision-makers. The anticipated outcomes of this policy are to accelerate city carbon emissions reduction, lessen the social and environmental impacts of city investments, and showcase how the city leads by example. We will look to the city bureaus that manage infrastructure to apply the policy. That includes the Water Bureau, OMF Facilities and City Fleet, Bureau of Environmental Services, Parks and Recreation, Fire and Rescue, and the Bureau of Transportation. City government emissions inventories reveal where our carbon comes from. Historically, we have relied on the production-based inventory on the left. The production-based inventory shows emissions that result directly from city operations. The supply chain inventory on the right shows carbon generated in the production of goods and services the city purchases. It offers a different perspective of how we account for carbon. This inventory was first completed for the 2015 Climate Action Plan. In terms of actual emissions, the supply chain inventory on the right is responsible for 4 times more carbon than the production-based inventory on the left. To be accurate, it should look more like this. These inventories served as a starting point to develop a scope of projects and end uses to which we apply an internal cost of carbon. By focusing on the big pieces of pie, we're able to focus on making the most impacts with this policy. City staff will apply the approved cost of carbon into the decision-making process for city assets that collectively account for most of the city government carbon emissions. The current scope includes typical infrastructure projects like new buildings and road construction. The carbon cost will help determine how the city's vehicles will transform to a lower carbon fleet. It will apply to the types of fuel and energy we use in vehicles and buildings and throughout the city government. It will guide strategic investments at the wastewater treatment plant to manage emissions. And it will be a tool to quantify benefits for resource recovery planning and ecosystem services like wetland development and urban forestry. These investments already require a life cycle cost assessment to measure first cost, operations and maintenance, and energy and fuel costs when comparing project options. This policy would simply add a carbon cost to that decision-making framework. The way we'll apply a cost of carbon is by using a carbon shadow price. A carbon shadow price is an evaluation tool that models the social and environmental cost impacts that result from carbon emissions associated with city investments. It is important to note that no direct project costs are incurred by applying a shadow price. Rather, metrics such as the benefit cost ratio and return on investment are influenced by integrating the shadow price with all of the other actual project costs being evaluated for each project option. The basis for the shadow price level is the social cost of carbon. The social cost of carbon, or SCC, is a widely accepted, well-known best practice used among governments for assigning an evaluation cost to carbon emissions. Estimates of the social cost of carbon do vary because of different assumptions about future emissions, how the climate will respond to those emissions, the impacts that will arise from those emissions, and the way that we value future damages. That said, we developed the shadow price level to align with leading economic research and existing municipal policies in North American cities. We're choosing to initially start at a high level in order to give us the best chance of having an impact on decision making. For each use type in the current scope, Bureau staff will be tasked with calculating the life cycle carbon emissions present in each project option. So, what emissions count? Carbon accounting protocols define 3 types of emissions. Scope 1 are those coming directly from the source, like a tailpipe or a smokestack. Scope 2 come from the energy something uses, like the generation of electricity or natural gas burned to produce heat. Scope 3 are those that come from the manufacturing of materials, like the embodied carbon in concrete, asphalt, and steel. Bureaus will include all the scopes that are available to quantify in their project analyses. I raise this point because there were a number of public comments about carbon accounting and accountability. For example, if choosing between vehicle types, scope 1 and 2 matter. Carbon emissions from the type of fuel used and what's coming out of the tailpipe are the primary sources of emissions. Scope 3 matters less in this example, and data may not be available to account for the steel and rubber that go into making the car. In contrast, a construction project like repaving a road, the embodied carbon in the asphalt is the primary emission source. So for that project, the focus would be on scope 3 emissions. Bureaus will be required to include justification when a scope of emissions is excluded from their analysis. So we can take a look at this policy in action. The Water Bureau created a business case to showcase this policy. The project: the Water Bureau Interstate facility needs to replace 7 hybrid sedans in their fleet and 19 mid-size gasoline trucks in their fleet as well. So, do they stick with the status quo or go electric? The life cycle cost of replacing, maintaining, and fueling these 26 vehicles was calculated to cost about $2.9 million in the current state. That's without a carbon cost incorporated into it. When a cost of carbon is also applied to the carbon, uh, to the carbon that's associated with the gasoline and electricity fuel types, that life cycle cost increases to over $3.1 million. The alternative option to address this project would be to install 26 electric vehicle charging stations and replace all of the vehicles with fully electric options. When the cost of carbon is applied to the fully electric fuel types, the charging stations, and all of the associated emissions, life cycle cost for the EV option was $2.9 million. Now, the result of applying the cost of carbon in this example, the life cycle cost savings for going electric increased from $27,000 without a carbon cost to $250,000 in savings when the carbon cost was applied. The break-even point is reduced by almost a third, and the benefit cost ratio becomes far more attractive, rising from 1.1 to 1.8. In this example, the application of an internal cost of carbon solidifies the business case for pursuing this low carbon alternative. For the policy to be successful, we must build a capacity of staff to understand how the policy works and give them the resources they need to apply it to their work. The goal is to create a streamlined analysis process that doesn't create a lot of additional time and effort in the project development process for staff. BPS staff will convene bureau-specific workshops with each bureau to model policy applications and train staff on specific tools and resources to use. BPS will also create city learner training so city staff has the opportunity to familiarize themselves with the policy. This training model is currently used for the city's green building policy to great success. BPS will also host a page on its website to post resources and tools. Carbon emissions calculators will be developed by staff with input from utilities for the most common use types like energy and materials, and links to existing calculation tools will also be made available. We will share information and assumptions to stakeholders and invite utilities to provide updates when their emission factors change to reflect the decarbonization of their products. The goal is to create an open source space where the city can share its implementation tools and resources and provide both transparency and access to both internal staff and the broader community. EPS will bring a progress report to council no later than January 2022. That progress report will include annual reporting, a list of the projects that have applied this cost of carbon, the scopes of emissions that they use, any rationale for exclusion of specific emissions, impacts to the life cycle cost analysis metrics that they performed during their options analysis, and any other relevant documentation to their projects. As Director Durbin mentioned, this is very much a first step and a first stage to the climate test. It's very much a first step to the internal cost of carbon policy. In the past 6 months, I've had extensive conversations with Bureau staff to determine where we can apply this tool. Two areas I want to highlight as future points of implementation are pipeline and pump stations and existing buildings. These are two big areas of the city infrastructure that we will address. The plan is to work with BES and the Water Bureau over the coming year to figure out what tools are needed and how we can apply this policy to the city's water and sewer infrastructure. It's a very, very big piece of our infrastructure that we want to include. Also, capital projects and existing building renovations that address inefficient end-of-life equipment and deferred maintenance issues also must be addressed. We are developing prescriptive approaches for buildings this coming year, like performance standards that set high efficiency energy efficiency requirements and provide guidance on energy end uses for retrofit projects. We will consider whether to incorporate the cost of carbon to supplement that work once the building standards work is completed. In summary, we are eager to implement this policy and get started on addressing carbon in city operations in new and meaningful ways. This climate emergency is challenging us to change the way we do business at a time when there's no real alternative to inaction. So with that, I thank you for your time and attention, and we'll open it up for discussion.
Very good. Colleagues, any questions at this particular moment? Danny, thank you for that presentation.
Sure.
Trying to give us our screen back.
I'm trying so hard.
No worries, all good. All of us are having some technological issues today. It's all good.
Thank you. I'm trying to get my screen back big enough to be able to do that. My apologies.
There you go.
You did it. You know better than me. All right. Mayor, if it's okay, before we go to invited testimony, I'm very happy to do my opening statement now and then do the invited testimony and then see if we have any public testimony.
Excellent. Thank you.
Commissioner, before, I hate to interrupt, but we do have to take a roll call. I'm sorry.
We got that minor detail. Okay, no worry.
All right. Please call the roll.
Udaly, Fritz.
Here.
Ryan.
Here.
Hardesty.
Here.
Wheeler.
Here. Wouldn't that have been embarrassing if we got all the way through the presentation and we realized the city council wasn't here? That would be embarrassing.
We were not officially in the room.
That would be so us and it would be so 2020. So I'm glad we took care of that perfunctory item. Commissioner Hardesty, you're up.
Thank you, Mayor. And clearly, after six and a half hours of nonstop city council meetings, all of us are a little discombobulated. And I am also grateful to the public who hung around waiting for us to get here. Let me just say that, among other things, the climate emergency declaration that we passed in June directed the city to involve youth and other stakeholders in the development of a climate test, such as internal cost of carbon or shadow price on carbon, to ensure city bureaus are making informed decisions based on the best available climate science, particularly for major capital investments in high carbon impact areas. Binding city policy already directs the bureau to maintain infrastructure at the lowest life cycle cost that meets service objectives. This resolution puts a finer point on this requirement. It provides the framework for how bureaus can begin to be made accountable for the cost of carbon emissions, a standard practice in operational decision-making. The resolution before us assigns a non-cash cost to carbon and some specific incidents of bureau decision-making. It doesn't cover everything, and we know that some folks have some different ideas about how this policy will take shape. We see this resolution as a necessary but insufficient step towards making decisions that promote lower carbon outcomes. We know that it's impossible to manage what we don't measure, and we have to start somewhere. Over the long term, bureau staff will continue to work together with our youth and stakeholders to broaden the applicability, say that three times fast, of a climate test beyond just the initial scope. We are grateful for the leadership of our community's youth on this subject, and we must do more to remain accountable to them and to the Black, Indigenous, and other people of color communities that are already bearing the brunt of climate change. We have made a minor change in how we're gonna have public testimony, and we're gonna start with Chris Warner for invited testimony, sorry. Chris Warner, there you are. All right, love to see everybody following the appropriate procedures. Hi, Chris.
Good afternoon, can you hear me?
Yes.
Great, I'm happy to be here. For the record, Chris Warner, Director of the Portland Bureau of Transportation, and we are here to support the Carbon Shadow Pricing Policy Resolution for you today. As you know, our climate has a transportation problem. Because we are so dependent on personal cars and because the majority of those cars burn fossil fuels, transportation is by far the largest contributor to our carbon footprint, both here in Portland and across the globe. At PBOT, one of our primary ways we have of tackling this problem is by making it easier and safer for Portlanders to get out of their cars and walk and bike and take transit from place to place. By reducing how much people rely on cars, shifting more trips to walking, biking, and transit, and replacing dirty fossil fuel vehicles with cleaner electric ones, we will take big steps towards meeting our ambitious climate goals. Our Rose Lane project, which was spearheaded by Commissioner Udaly and will make taking transit faster and more reliable for all Portlanders, is just the latest example of our efforts along those lines. As it is rolled out, it will provide Portlanders with safe, convenient, low carbon choices to meet their daily transportation needs. Of course, there is another way that the transportation sector contributes to the climate crisis, and that's how we build our infrastructure. That is why we are so supportive of the approach envisioned by this new policy. By putting a price on carbon, it puts the cost of the climate in our decisions about how we build our infrastructure front and center. We see this as an important tool to help us make better decisions for the climate. It will also help us build on the steps we've already taken to decrease the carbon impact of our construction and maintenance activities. At PBOT, we recycle our concrete, rock, and dirt we use for fill. Almost all of our asphalt goes back into plants for recycling. All of our new asphalt that we currently use has 30% recycled materials. And last year, we started to factor in the cost of emissions when we identify the quality of project alternatives and define such key components of a project as its location and materials it uses. We did this on 4 projects for which we requested general fund support. This new technique allowed us to consider the carbon pollution generated by the project, and we adjusted our project rankings accordingly. This is a real win for climate. Now, with the support of this new policy, we're confident we can develop even better climate-friendly practices in the future asset management strategies and our construction and maintenance practices. Last year, we launched Moving to Our Future, our 2019-2024 strategic plan. While sustainability has always been a priority for us in the past, Moving to Our Future has taken a bolder step. We made reducing our climate footprint along with achieving racial equity into a central part of everything we do, pledging to ask 2 questions of every policy, program, and project. Will it advance equity and address structural racism? And will it reduce carbon emissions? This is why we are so supportive of this initiative. It aligns exactly where we want to go as a transportation bureau. Mayor and commissioners, I really want to thank you for your far-sighted leadership on one of the most essential challenges of our time. I'd also like to thank Director Durbin and her staff at BPS for her partnership on planning and building a greener Portland. Working together, we think that we can make forward progress and make confronting our climate crisis a battle that we can win. So thank you very much for your time, and I'll turn it back over to the next speaker.
Thank you. Next, we're going to hear from Kavita.
Kavita, I'll help you out. Kavita. Oh, thank you.
Don't make me embarrass myself here in public.
Thank you, Commissioner. Thank you, Mayor, Commissioners, for the chance to testify today. My name is Kavita Hine. I'm the Climate Change Program Manager with the Portland Water Bureau. And I'm speaking on behalf of the Water Bureau today in strong support for the proposed shadow price on carbon you have before you. The Water Bureau sees this as another important step that our Bureau can take in mainstreaming climate change risk management and responsibility into meeting our mission and delivering an essential service to our customers. For over 20 years, the Water Bureau has used leading-edge climate science to plan for climate change and has also been tracking and publicly reporting our carbon footprint since 2007. We've taken many measures over the years to increase the energy efficiency of our operations, install renewable energy capacity, and move towards a greener fleet. The Water Bureau was proud to be the first city bureau to pilot this proposed shadow price on carbon in a recent business case analysis for an electric vehicle charging infrastructure project, as you just heard about from Danny Grady. The goal of this project is to scale up the number of electric vehicles within our fleet. While the Water Bureau regularly considers environmental impacts in our projects, this was the first time we used a quantifiable shadow price on carbon developed to conduct this analysis. So I want to commend and thank the Water Bureau staff who were involved for testing this new and more climate resilient approach. We use the proposed shadow price of carbon that Danny mentioned, which is 117 metric tons, along with 2 other higher future prices to demonstrate how the long-term value of our electric vehicle charging project would increase when we account for the social cost of carbon. And this business case analysis using the shadow price on carbon showed us that a social cost on carbon increases the benefit cost ratio and reduces the break-even point of our electric vehicle charging infrastructure project, therefore providing a greater return on investment for the Water Bureau and our customers. And the higher the social cost of carbon we considered, the greater the benefit cost ratio and return on investment. So what our business case experience demonstrated to us is that integrating a shadow price on carbon really helps to draw a much clearer picture of the benefits of a carbon reduction project and greatly informs decision making towards more sustainable action. So in summary, the Water Bureau is supportive of this shadow price on carbon resolution before you today because it provides an important path to systematically assess and account for climate change impacts in Bureau project decision making. We'll now be working to identify other water system opportunities with the Bureau of Planning Sustainability and members in our staff within our Bureau. But we need to recognize that this approach will take time to scale up and institutionalize. And also we need to be considering both the climate resilience and equity components of our decision making. So we also hope the pilot project where we tried this shadow price on carbon will also be an example to other bureaus who want to start using the social cost of carbon in their project decision making. Finally, the shadow price on carbon, we believe to be widely utilized and accessed across all bureaus. It's critical for bureaus to receive technical support from the Bureau of Planning Sustainability and other experts on the tools and data needed to actually do these calculations. So with that, I want to thank you for the opportunity to testify.
And I am muted. Yes, I'll try that again. Thank you so much. Our next testifier is Maddie Sauter.
And this is Danny. I'm going to be sharing my screen because Maddie has a few slides.
Okay.
Sorry, I thought we were bringing slides to this, so I brought mine. So again, my name is Maddie Sauter, and I run the Division of Asset Management for the City of Portland. I was in front of you guys a couple weeks ago talking about some of the green fleet work that we're doing, and I was more than happy to come and support this testimony on behalf of BPS to talk about some of the work that we're doing and how we would use shadow price in our analyses. So I have an infrastructure background, and I can't think of any infrastructure management entity that doesn't do some sort of business case for investment. So business cases are very essential. You're making a lot of heavy investment decisions or long-lasting investment decisions that are very expensive, and so you want to make sure that you're making the right investments. So where Fleet is looking to do this is to apply a shadow price of carbon to our business case analysis. And I talked a little bit about that a couple weeks ago when we were talking about EV charging. You need to understand what your pricing inputs are in order to run a legitimate business case. So a challenge is for us, and I want to demonstrate the difference between a shadow price and a carbon fee. Shadow prices are useful for this modeling exercise. So when you use them, you can understand the long-term impacts of decision-making. You can understand the risk and cost streams to society of the choices that you're making, carbon or otherwise. You can understand where in your business model you need to bring down other costs so that you can pay for the requirements to implement this. They really help to set strategy, to set policy, and understand your hurdle rate for investment. So shadow pricing is something that should be consistently deployed by any infrastructure bureau when they're making investment decisions. That could be for water systems or EV charging or for fleet procurements. That's a little bit different from where we'd like to go, which is ultimately to a carbon fee. And I just wanted to talk about this to support BPS. I know this isn't what they're necessarily bringing forward, but I do think that this is the future once we get shadow pricing up and running. A carbon fee is really a penalty for bad behavior, bad climate behavior in this instance. So it's most appropriate for mature fields, and why I put almost behind sedans is we're not even there yet with sedans. So as I spoke to you a couple of weeks ago, we need to have consistent pricing and affordable pricing for EV infrastructure before we believe that it is appropriate to tax ourselves or apply a carbon fee to the sedan asset class. And the reason for that is that the carbon fee assumes that you have a viable market substitute for whatever it is that you're trying to do poorly. And because of that, it charges you a tax. And that tax is the money that you would have used to build infrastructure. So once we get EVs up and running and we have infrastructure that's affordable, we will be probably trying to pioneer a carbon tax in fleet so that we can use money taxed for bad fleet behavior, procurements that really shouldn't be done that way, to help fund infrastructure for other things that are still developing. So we wanted to come offer testimony to illustrate the differences between these two things and illustrate where we think things could go. I also want to talk a little bit, though, about what's required to get there. So, Danny, if you could go to the other slide. As noted, most infrastructure bureaus are running business cases of some kind. But what is required to really implement a carbon fee of any kind or even a shadow pricing is some sort of consistent methodology. And so I will say that the infrastructure bureaus have been working together very well to try and end up with common cost values for this and other types of costs that would be in a business case. CAMG is a citywide asset managers group, and very recently we pulled together a methodology to help assess projects for something called the capital set-aside. And we all deployed this last year, but what we noticed in that process is that we all used a different cost of carbon. So obviously as infrastructure bureaus, we can't do that. So we need to probably settle on one ultimate cost of carbon that's reevaluated over time. We need to have common valuation methodologies between the bureaus. And all of that does take investment. It takes staff, resources, tracking, along with reporting for this work. And as Kavita noted, this is organizational development for most of the bureaus. We don't necessarily have the staff in place to do this kind of work. But that matters when you're trying to decide on, should I be investing in a new EV dump truck, or should I be instead investing in urban forestry or water pollution control activities, whatever it might be. So we are heavily in support of this. We think that this is a very good step in the business case development process overall for city infrastructure, but also for ensuring that carbon costing is part of that risk stream and part of that cost stream to society. So thank you for your time.
Thank you, Marty. Is there public testimony, Keelan, on this item?
Let's see. It looks like we have one person on the line to testify. We had a couple people signed up, but we have one person available now.
Excellent. This is probably a good time to call our public testimony.
First up, we have Ella Schreiner.
Hi, can you hear me?
Loud and clear.
Okay, perfect. I'm Ella Schreiner, and I'm a member of the Portland Youth Climate Council. And we at PYCC appreciate the incredible amount of work that has gone into this policy and the efforts that were made by Danny Grady and Amanda Watson to engage youth throughout the process. I'm excited to be here testifying in full support of the policy. However, while this is a great step in the right direction and a win in itself, I feel I must continue to push you to go further and to go faster, to not limit your thinking to what feels practical, but to do what is truly necessary with regards to citywide climate action. While today's carbon shadow price policy is not the climate test that youth called for in September of 2019, it is an important first step in embedding consideration of climate impacts into city decision-making. In the months to come, we hope to be partners in creating a true climate test that will be used to evaluate every policy, proposal, and permit that goes through the city government. Beyond today's council vote, I hope that you remember that you hold these positions in order to serve the people, not big businesses and corporations. And I ask that you all act with greater courage and vision as new climate policies are brought forward in the coming months. Thank you.
Thank you, appreciate it. And thank you for your patience. We know you've been waiting a long time. And so thank you for sticking around to testify and to hear the presentation.
Thank you.
Keelan, is there other public testimony?
No.
Colleagues, any further questions? Call the roll on the resolution, please.
Fritz.
This is exciting work. Thank you very much for the presentation. I'm looking forward to seeing where it goes, and I'm glad that you brought this while I'm still here to say this is exciting work. Well done, and I'm glad to support it. Aye.
Ryan.
Yes, excuse me. Thank you, Mayor Wheeler and Commissioner Hardesty, Director Durbin, and Danny Grady. I really appreciate the dialogue we've had leading up to this. I think this is a step and it's in the right direction. I also think that system change does begin with this kind of systemic data-driven evaluation. I think that I know I pushed back a little bit in our meeting about the consequences of non-cash, trying to understand that. So that's probably one reason why I think it's a step. And I look forward to looking at the data and seeing how we're doing and then knowing when we need to implement some additional consequences so we can get the impact and the results that we need. But I'm really supportive of the step we're taking today. Aye.
Hardesty.
I look forward to working and supporting the bureaus as they move forward on the implementation. I'm excited that we are committed to being transparent and accountable and completing and understanding these internal costs of carbon analysis. I also look forward to the continued collaboration with youth, other stakeholders, as we broaden and improve upon the scope of the climate test. And I just want to say how proud I am to have the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability in my portfolio. The thoughtfulness under which you have taken on this effort. Mayor Wheeler, I want to applaud the work that you did before I inherited BPS. We would not be here today without the incredible leadership and commitment to getting us on this path. I am very happy to vote aye.
Wheeler.
Thank you, Commissioner Hardesty, and right back at you. I want to thank you for your partnership on this. We each carried the baton part of the way here, and I certainly want to thank the youth leaders for their advocacy and their engagement with staff in the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability and my office on this policy. And I also acknowledge that we've heard that a carbon shadow price is not everything that youth were calling for when they called on the city to adopt a climate test. This is, as several people have noted, an important first step that will start to institutionalize how the city takes climate impact into account in our overall decision-making. And we are committed to expanding on this policy and working with the youth advocates to explore the ideas they have for what a climate action test should look, what a climate test should look like. I also want to thank as well Danny Grady and Andrea Jacob for the Bureau of Planning and from the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability for your hard work on this policy. And again, Commissioner Hardesty, not just for your work, but also your staff's hard work on this and the collaboration that we enjoyed throughout the development of this policy. I'm happy to vote aye. The resolution is adopted. Thank you all. Next up, believe it or not, it's our last item for the day. So let's relish it. It is item 1011.
Establish selection criteria for a commission to craft the new police oversight system authorized by voters at the November 3rd, 2020 general election.
Commissioner Hardesty.
Thank you, Mayor. First, let me start by thanking all of my city council colleagues for your unanimous support of sending a new police oversight process to the voters in the city of Portland. I also want to thank the voters in the city of Portland because it's been a long time since I've seen a ballot measure passed by an 82% vote. So clearly the people of Portland are with us in this process. Not only did they support it, but they overwhelmingly did so. This resolution is the next step in what will be a long and engaged process in setting up this new oversight board. With the passage of this resolution, we will authorize city bureaus to formally develop and publish an application for the commission that will work on the details of the new oversight board. My office has coordinated with numerous bureaus involved in this process, and I am happy that today we are here at this process, to get this process underway before the new year starts. While the application process is underway, we will be working with all of you and our community partners to finalize a second resolution that will provide guidance on the work that the commission will have to complete during its tenure. We have Heidi Brown from the City Attorney's Office here if there are any additional questions. And Mayor, I have two motions that I will need to make to substitute the resolution. I propose that we substitute the resolution for one that was in your Tuesday package. If I could get a second on that.
Second.
You have a motion from Commissioner Hardesty, a second from Commissioner Ryan on the substitute. Any further discussions on the substitute? Helan, please call the roll on the substitute.
Fritz.
Aye.
Ryan.
Aye.
Hardesty.
Aye.
Wheeler.
Aye. Substitutes on the table. Commissioner Hardesty.
Thank you. Mayor, I also have another amendment. I would like to substitute the Exhibit A that you received in your Tuesday packet. Can I get a second?
Commissioner Hardesty moves. Commissioner Fritz seconds the amendment. Any further discussion on the substitution amendment? Hearing none, Keelan, please call the roll.
Fritz.
Aye.
Ryan.
Aye.
Hardesty.
Aye.
Wheeler.
The amendment is adopted, and back to the substitution is amended. Commissioner Hardesty.
Back to the original. Mayor, I am happy to lay out what the timeline will be for us to develop this process. If I think that's probably good for the record. As you may know, we have been having meetings and will continue to have meetings to schedule with Civic Life the application process. They were here earlier, but unfortunately could not stay until the end. We will be finalizing those applications and the template by January 5th. Mayor, I know you had some questions, and we will make sure to get your questions answered prior to completing that process. On January 11th, the applications will be formally open. We believe the application process will end on February 8th. By early March, we will have our final selections. And we anticipate that shortly thereafter, the committee will convene and will start their 18-month process to put together our new Community Police Oversight Board. Are there any questions? And I'm happy to say that Heidi's here to answer any questions if you have them. I see no questions.
Just wanted to check in that Civic Life is here too. I just got on.
Oh, very cool. I thought you had to leave. I'm glad to hear that. So we've got two question answerers other than myself, if there are any.
Maybe just for the record, it would be helpful. My understanding is this is modeled in measure on the Charter Review Commission process. Could somebody elaborate on that?
I will just say that I have been so impressed with the way Civic Life does community engagement around our oversight boards. I believe this will be my third experience working with them. We did it first with PSEF. We were very intentional about reaching out to communities that don't traditionally sign up for government processes. And as you can see from PSEF, we have a very diverse, committed oversight board that is working hard to get those first grants out the door. We just recently completed our process with the Charter Review Commission. And again, it is one of the most diverse intentional committees that I have ever seen us put together at the City of Portland. And I am absolutely positive that Civic Life will work with us to make sure that this board or this Community Oversight Board for Policing will be just as reflective of the broad community that needs to be engaged in this conversation. So they have a track record of doing it well, which is why we go to them a lot.
Great.
Any other questions? Thank you both. And thank you so much. It's been a very long day for all of us. I'm very grateful that you are still here to answer questions. Thank you for being here, Ashley and Heidi. Mayor, I'll turn it back over to you.
All right. Any public testimony on this resolution?
Yes, we have one person signed up, Vadim Mazirsky.
Excellent. Welcome.
Thank you. Can you all hear me?
Yes, loud and clear.
Okay, great. Good afternoon, Mayor Wheeler and City Commissioners. My name is Vadim Mazirsky, and I would like to suggest the following amendment to Exhibit A. Exhibit A notes that the membership of the commission will entail 20 people, 5 people from communities that have been historically over-policed, as well as 5 people from organizations that provide support to those communities. And then five people from justice organizations as well as small businesses. Now, the communities that are enumerated as being over-policed include Black, Indigenous, and people of color, low-income and houseless communities, and persons experiencing mental health issues. I would like to point out that there's one major constituency that has not been listed as a community that has been over-policed. That is the immigrant and refugee community in Portland. Which has historically been victim of over-policing and biased policing. A report of the Urban Institute estimates that 13% of the Portland population is foreign-born. It's estimated an equal number of individuals are children of immigrants. And this data doesn't even fully encompass undocumented immigrants. So this is a very large portion of the Portland population. The need to share that voice is noted in both city policies and state policies. For example, Ordinance 1878-05 declares that Portland City Council is committed to developing policies and best practices to fully integrate immigrants and refugee community members. Oregon Governor Kate Brown's Executive Order 17-04 renews Oregon's commitment to protect immigrants and refugees. And over-policing of immigrants and refugees was implicitly recognized in City Resolution 37277, which declared the city of Portland a welcoming city, a sanctuary city, and an inclusive city. It says that the city seeks to affirm Portland's commitment to protect and support immigrants and refugee communities, and that PPB shall not cooperate with ICE except as required by federal law. And so with respect to the over-policing of the immigrant refugee community, there's been many studies out there, but I point to one specifically with the time constraints here. In May of 2013, the Department of Urban Planning and Policy at the University of Illinois at Chicago pointed out that 44% of immigrants surveyed reported they are less likely to contact police officers if they have been the victims of a crime because they feared the police. 70% of undocumented immigrants reported that they are less likely to contact law enforcement authorities if they were the victims of crimes. 40% of immigrants felt that they were under more suspicion by the police, and 58% of undocumented immigrants felt that same way. When asked how often police officers stopped immigrants without good reason or cause, 64% of foreign-born respondents said that very often or somewhat often they were stopped without good cause. And 78% of undocumented immigrants responded that same way. And so on behalf of the 85,000 immigrants living in Portland, I urge you to amend Exhibit A to include immigrants and refugees as communities that have been over-policed. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Vadim. I just want you to know that we will absolutely make that amendment, and it was certainly in my mind, they were included as well. Thank you so much for that. Was just that was something that should have been in there. So my apologies, and I think we may even be able to amend it on the spot today. I will check with our legal counsel. Really appreciate you being here. And let me say, I've done a lot of work over the years with Unite Oregon around just the issues that you discussed. And so I hope the record that we've talked about with the other two committees are also very reflective about immigrant and refugee communities. So thank you.
Commissioner Hardesty, with regard to Vadim's comment, I assumed that the immigrant and refugee community was included in
yes,
the description, but I certainly have no objection to that being called out explicitly if that's something you would like to do and if there is no objection from legal counsel.
No objection, Mayor.
Thank you, Karen.
Excellent. And so do we need to second that, or is that something?
I'll assume that's a second to your motion to include that language. If you could just restate it in general terms, just so we have it on the record.
Yes. The segment that states that we will have representatives. Let me pull up the document. Heaven forbid I try to do it from memory. It doesn't work well for me most of the time. Uh, Number five says the final commission must consist of five community members that have historically been overplaced, five people from organizations that provide support. The line that we will be amending says these can include communities representing Black, Indigenous, and or people of color, low-income, houseless community members, immigrants and refugees, and persons experiencing mental health issues.
And that is amended language adding that.
That is correct.
I will second that.
Thank you.
So we have a motion from Commissioner Hardesty. Mayor is seconded. Any further discussion on the amendment? Please call the roll.
Fritz?
Aye.
Ryan?
Aye.
Hardesty?
Aye.
Wheeler?
Thank you, Fadim, for sticking around and making sure that we included that language explicitly. Thank you, Commissioner Hardesty, for offering the amendment. I'm happy to vote aye. The amendment is adopted.
This is a first reading of a non-emergency item.
That is correct. So this is a resolution, so we will take the vote. Colleagues, this is the vote on the substitute as amended. Any further discussion? Please call the roll.
Fritz.
Commissioner Hardesty, thank you for your continued leadership on this issue, and thank you for the community engagement that's going to come along. Aye.
Ryan.
Yes, thank you, Commissioner Hardesty, and also for your staff for the work on this. I did drop a few things during the campaign to help get those numbers up, and I'm very proud to be on a city council that's united on this issue, and I look forward to more dialogue about making sure we land the composite like we have with some other commissions of late. I vote aye.
Hardesty.
I want to once again thank each and every one of my city council colleagues. You supported this. You supported it early. You were clear. We were unanimous in sending this to the voters. We will end up with an excellent process because of the intentionality that we're taking. I'm happy to vote aye.
Wheeler.
I'd like to thank Commissioner Hardesty and her policy director, Derek Bradley, for bringing this resolution before us today for our consideration. There have been quite a few questions, obviously, around the next steps for this oversight body following the passage of Measure 26217, overwhelmingly by Portland voters. So I'm heartened to see concrete steps being taken towards the body's formation. That is a very good thing. And Commissioner Hardesty, thank you for acknowledging the importance of this item and the need for continued coordination and collaboration amongst our offices. My only ask at this time is that we continue to coordinate, and that would include not only staff from my office, but from all of the offices of commissioners, though this is clearly your brainchild, and I want to make that clear. I do believe it's the prerogative and, in fact, the duty of the entire council to ensure that this item is successful and fully fulfills Portland voters' wishes. We collectively need to make sure that your team is supported and that we're working towards full implementation. And I applaud your leadership on this and thank you for your continued efforts. I vote aye. The substitute resolution is adopted as amended. And I can't believe it, but I actually believe we made it through the day's agenda. Am I right, Keelan?
Yes, Mayor, that's correct.
Well, everybody have a great rest of your afternoon. And thank you all for doing a really great job today and sticking with it for many, many hours on end. Thank you and have a fantastic evening.
Thank you.
We are adjourned.
You too. Bye-bye.
Well done, everybody. Thank you, Keelan.